Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
There are not thousands of workers sitting at home playing video games or watching TV rather than going to work because of government subsidies or unemployment benefits.
Economists say Anchorage has plenty of open jobs, but not enough workers to fill them. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 4th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a Ketchikan couple sues over a school's use of traditional tribal values.
I feel that one of the values, reverence for our creators, is undeniably a religious statement about creationism.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Two of the three candidates vying to finish the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term in the U.S. House of Representatives made the trip to Kenai yesterday for a candidate forum hosted by the Kenai and Soldotna Chambers of Commerce. In attendance were Republican candidate Nick Begich III and Democrat Mary Peltola. Republican Sarah Palin did not attend. The two candidates discussed gas prices, homelessness, debt, immigration, and their priorities for the job. Peltola said her top priorities for Alaska are to fund infrastructure improvements at ports in the state like Anchorage's Port of Alaska and to codify safe and legal abortions. Begich spoke in favor of energy and development and combating inflation.
I don't think you can represent the state if you're not pro-resource development. I think we've got to make a strong business case for the state of Alaska, and that's top priority for me.
In response to a question about what the candidates would do in Congress on behalf of the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project, Begich expressed his unequivocal support for building the pipeline and said he would work to garner support from lawmakers. Peltola said Alaska should consider other ways of shipping gas overseas, like a route to Europe through the Arctic. Both candidates expressed strong support for the right to bear arms. Begich advocated against any restrictions to gun access. Peltola spoke in favor of bipartisan discussions about the definitions of assault rifles and acknowledged a, quote, epidemic of gun violence. Regarding budget policy and the federal deficit, Begich called for a balancing of the budget by reeling in government spending and growing the economy. Peltola called for a revision of tax policies and the removal of caps on income taxes for the wealthy. Both candidates emphasized their commitment to bipartisan collaboration and conversation across the aisle, with Peltola going so far as to call partisanship an issue of national security.
The way that we tear each other down politically, I think, is a tremendous threat, and it makes our enemies nothing but happy.
Begich used his closing statement to critique candidate Sarah Palin, who has led the pack in fundraising, for her lack of attendance at the forum. In Peltola's closing statement, she talked about her children and her vested interest in the future of the state. Early voting opened Monday for the special election. Voters are ranking the candidates in Alaska's first ever election to use ranked choice voting. Well, there are thousands of open job listings in Anchorage, not enough workers to fill them. That's a major takeaway from the 3-year economic outlook from the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the corporation is feeling good about the city's economic future, but there are challenges ahead.
AEDC CEO Bill Popp says he's optimistic for Anchorage's future over the next 3 years.
We see job growth on the horizon, new investments lining up for our city, and opportunities in several industries for expansion.
Popp, who, full disclosure, is a member of Alaska Public Media's board of directors, addressed a packed audience of business leaders at the Denina Center Wednesday. Even before the pandemic, Popp says the state was in rough fiscal waters as the price of oil began to drop in 2016.
The lower 48 economy was red hot from 2015 to early 2020, before COVID, while Anchorage and Alaska were in the longest recession our state had seen in decades.
Popp says that led to a large number of workers leaving the state. Fast forward to 2022, and Pop says there are record numbers of job openings in Anchorage, but not enough workers to fill them. Pop says it's not because people don't want to work.
There are not thousands of workers sitting at home playing video games or watching TV rather than going to work because of government subsidies or unemployment benefits. Anchorage currently has a 79% labor force participation rate.
Pop says that rate is very high, and that means that the city needs to grow its workforce to keep up with job openings. As far as where the jobs are, Pop says the transportation industry, construction, and business sectors are all gaining jobs. Additionally, the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport is now the fourth busiest cargo airport in the world, and officials anticipate record numbers of passengers by 2025. Oil and gas, healthcare, and state jobs are among sectors on the decline. Pop says the biggest success is the tourism industry.
This sector leads job growth in our city, adding over 2,600 jobs so far in 2022. Hotels are packed and rates are way up. Convention bookings are rebounding solidly. Passenger numbers at the airport are nearly at pre-pandemic levels, all in the face of a relentless shortage of workers to fill hundreds of jobs going vacant for lack of workers.
He says one issue that needs to be addressed to get more workers to the state's largest city will be housing. Anchorage didn't build a lot of housing as the pandemic slowed the city down. The price of housing has also gone up, with the average Anchorage home valued at just over $450,000. Pop says there are record low numbers of homes being listed.
Our problem there is that we're land poor in terms of readily, easily developable housing, but we're also developing housing that's more focused backwards in our perspective. We need to start thinking about the kinds of housing that will create new opportunities for changing tastes in housing, and that's going to be more vertical in some parts of Anchorage.
Pop says that building strategy could increase the number of downtown residents from about 1,000 to over 5,000. AEDC officials predict an increase of about 500 homes across the city by the end of the year. Pop says the city will also have to invest in making Anchorage a more attractive place to live. He describes Oklahoma City as the gold standard example of a boom-bust oil town, like Anchorage, that was able to transform into a major tech and tourism destination due to city investment over 30 years, with a 1% sales tax.
Oklahoma City, between their sales tax and their bonds, put in over $1 billion of public works infrastructure and public amenities infrastructure into their city across the board. They have quantified that as over $5 billion worth of private sector, one-to-one, because of this $1 billion the city put in, $5 billion in private sector investment has resulted in their city, and not just in downtown, all over their city.
Pop says making major strides in developing Anchorage will require a similar investment.
These projects take a decade or more to get done. You know, the business community and the community at large has got to be there saying, okay, this is what we agreed to, this is where we're going, and we can't change course because it's a new administration. We've got to move on and continue to focus on what we all agreed to at the beginning. And I think that's one of the big secrets to Oklahoma City's success.
Pop says a contingent of business officials from Anchorage will travel to Oklahoma City in the coming months in order to gauge how best to replicate that city's success back home. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
A former Alaska correctional officer has been sentenced to 2 years in prison after admitting to smuggling drugs and cell phones into inmates jailed at the Mat-Su facility where she worked. Angela Lincoln was arrested in November 2021 and pleaded guilty to one count each of conspiracy and bribery. A judge sentenced her Wednesday. Lincoln worked at Goose Creek Correctional Center, southwest of Wasilla on Point McKenzie, for 6 years, starting in 2014. Prosecutors wrote in court documents that in 2019, Lincoln, quote, allowed greed to overcome her ethical responsibilities. That's when they say she started smuggling Suboxone strips and burner cell phones into the medium security prison. Lincoln was smuggling the contraband for an inmate serving a 100-year sentence for murder, according to the court documents. In exchange, the documents say people working for the inmate outside of prison would give Lincoln cash, which ultimately amounted to about $30,000. What Lincoln didn't know was that one of the inmate's associates was working with federal investigators, sharing texts and recording phone calls. FBI agents confronted Lincoln in June 2020. The court documents say that following a series of interviews in which she initially denied the smuggling, Lincoln admitted everything and gave up all of the bribe money. The prosecutors recommended Lincoln, as a former correctional officer, not be jailed in Alaska. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, biologists have a shocking new way to catch an invasive species of crayfish.
Flexes their muscles sporadically, and it gets them to come to the surface.
They shock them. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
A coalition of local, state, and national groups are suing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over the Fairbanks North Pole area's poor wintertime air quality. A release issued by the nonprofit environmental law organization Earth Justice says the Sierra Club, Alaska Community Action on Toxics, and Fairbanks-based Citizens for Clean Air have sent a notice of intent to sue the EPA for missing a, quote, fourth deadline in 4 years to address Fairbanks' air pollution problem. It says the EPA missed a June 15th deadline to rule on an updated state plan to bring the area into compliance with federal fine particulate pollution standards. The agency tightened those standards in 2006, and a large portion of Fairbanks and North Pole was identified as a non-attainment area in 2009 due to winter air pollution primarily attributed to wood burning. Earth Justice says this will be the fifth time the groups have sued EPA in the last 8 years to speed regulatory action on Fairbanks North Pole air quality. An EPA-funded wood stove changeout program has paid for the removal or replacement of wood stoves, and local levels of health-threatening fine particulates have come down significantly over the past decade, but the area is still far from achieving a federal Clean Air Act standard by a 2024 deadline. Two parents are suing Ketchikan School District over a school's use of traditional tribal values. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
In the hallways and classrooms of Ketchikan Charter School are posters with a list of traditional Alaska Native values. The 14 Southeast traditional tribal values range from respect for self, elders, and others, and speak with care, to things like discipline and obedience to the traditions of our ancestors, and reverence for our Creator. That last point has proven controversial.
I feel that one of the values, reverence for our creators, is undeniably a religious statement about creationism.
That's parent Justin Brees, speaking at a school board meeting in April. He filed the suit on July 25th along with his wife, Rebecca King, who's also a kindergarten teacher at the charter school. In their lawsuit against Ketchikan Charter School and Ketchikan School District, the couple argues that the school's use of the values violates the First Amendment and the state's constitution. The lawsuit takes particular issue with the school's Value of the Week program, which rewards students that exemplify the values. Here's King speaking to the school board in April.
This system rewards students for showing the tribal values and holds it up as what all students should strive for. In our school, the Ketchikan Charter School, a student is highlighted and given a reward for embodying the value of the week.
She said she disagrees in modeling one culture as what is best or right. She thinks the values should be taught in lessons about culture and that culture should be represented in the classroom. Brees told the board that he wanted the values to be presented in context.
I personally think that we can do better than just posting cultural values in our classrooms. While opposed to this posting, I also don't believe that it is an effective way to build cultural respect.
He submitted a formal request asking the school district to take the posters down and restrict the use of the document to lessons about tribal values and beliefs, but the district declined. A decision by district business manager Katie Parrott found that the values represented a Native outlook on life. She says that there isn't an overall religion specific to Southeast Alaska that the values advocate. She said the values were used for cultural rather than religious education. Brees appealed to the school board, which upheld the district's ruling. Now, Brees and King are asking Ketchikan Superior Court Judge Catherine Librand to order the district to take down the posted values from common areas and stop using them to promote good behavior. Ketchikan School District has yet to respond to the lawsuit in court, Superintendent Michael Robbins referred questions to the district attorney, Clinton Campion, who did not return phone calls on Wednesday. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The city of Soldotna is updating a series of trails downtown to make them compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Behind the project are some of the very people who stand to benefit from the updated sidewalks and roadways along the Kenai River and beyond. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Wednesday is a really good day for Mary Nell Larson of Soldotna.
A friend of mine picks me up on her day off, which is Wednesday, and we go there every single Wednesday. I love it. Just to walk up and down, do whatever, stand and watch the fishermen fish or whatever.
But she knows not everyone can go out and enjoy Soldotna Creek Park like she can. She was previously a resident of Heritage Place, the hospital-operated long-term care facility in Soldotna. She says it makes her sad that people with different physical abilities can't enjoy the park like she does because the trails there are made of gravel and aren't accessible to people in wheelchairs or with mobility issues. So she took her idea to the Heritage Place staff.
But they would love it if they could just go along the river and see what I saw today. Can we do something?
Now, more than 3 years later, the city of Soldotna is creating a network of ADA-accessible paved trails that will start at the parking lot at Soldotna Creek Park and go over to Homestead Lane, so people of all abilities can access all that the park has to offer, including the playground and the Wednesday Market and concert series. Odd Walzak is the activity coordinator for Heritage Place. She says when Soldotna City Manager Stephanie Queen came to the center as part of a community conversations series, the residents shared with her their vision.
And so that's when it happened, is that the resident shared with her, we've got this great bus, but we can't really get out of the bus and go on the trails because the chairs and everything would just get stuck on the gravel. And so we can't really participate in all of those wonderful things that happen over there.
City Planning Director John Zarneski says the paved trails at Soldotna Creek Park are the first segment of the city's project to make downtown Soldotna more ADA compliant. He says the city successfully applied for funding for the project from a statewide grant with a letter of support from Heritage Place.
That was back in 2019. And so it's been a long time coming as far as getting the dollars, but they are now in the design phase and we anticipate ground to be broke next year for the trails.
Walzak says Heritage Place already has a program that gets residents and patients outside on scavenger hunts and for walks. But she says it will be especially meaningful to get folks out during the Wednesday markets, for example, when the park is bustling.
Because the important thing to remember is that everyone inside here isn't invisible. We are a part, an active part of the community, and we want to advocate not just only for the residents inside Heritage Place, but for everybody in the community. And there's a large number of people who would really benefit and be able to take, enjoy the city and everything it has to offer more.
Larson, now 86 years old, says for her, getting out into the park is an instant mood lifter.
It makes me feel 10 years younger than I am. And that is a lift for anyone.
She says it makes her so excited to think about taking her friends from Heritage Place out for a ride or a walk in the park so they can enjoy it like she does. She says the upgrades can't come soon enough. Zarneski says he hopes the trails are completed by 2024. In Soldotna, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The state's fall hunt for 40-mile caribou is scheduled to open next week with a 900-bull harvest quota, down significantly from the past 2 years. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the herd has declined.
The 2020 and 2021 fall 40-mile caribou hunts had quotas of 5,000 and 4,500 animals, respectively. and allowed the harvest of bulls and cows. The larger fall hunts, combined with additional animals taken during the winter season, aim to reduce the 40-mile herd enough to avoid a population crash. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Tok Area biologist Jeff Gross says a herd decline was confirmed this summer by the first photo census since 2017.
When we saw about 80,000 caribou in the herd, this year's estimate is about 40,000 caribou.
Gross says the 50% drop was not unexpected given the past 2 years' large harvests and long-term indicators of nutritional stress in the herd.
Declining reproduction and survival rate of younger animals.
Gross says whether or not that will continue also played into the conservative approach to this fall's hunt.
We don't know if the herd is going to stabilize or if there could be continued decline.
40-mile caribou range across the Taylor and Steese highways, where they're accessible to large numbers of hunters. And Gross says that enables biologists to use harvest to manage herd size. This fall's state registration permit hunt opens August 10th, and nearly half of the 900 bull harvest quota is assigned to two zones in the Steese Highway area north of Fairbanks, where Gross says the herd is primarily spread out.
However, if things do change throughout the season, and we don't see much harvest in one zone or another, we may end up shifting some of the quota if there's opportunity in a different zone as we get toward the end of the season.
Gross notes that given this year's reduced harvest quota, if caribou do congregate along the Steese, the fall hunt could be over quickly. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
As some fish stocks crash and others boom, Alaska's marine management systems are challenged to respond. There's more demand for people who know both marine science and policy expertise. Starting next month, the University of Alaska Fairbanks and University of Alaska Southeast will be offering a new graduate degree in marine policy. KUAC's Robin reports.
The increasing effects of climate change on marine ecosystems is pushing managers to have a working knowledge of both natural science and how to tell people why it matters. Dr. Keith Criddle of the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences at UAF has his office in Juneau. He's been working on opening this degree program for years.
Yeah, what we've heard for years from our fisheries graduates and their employers, you know, as they've gone on and gone to work in the agencies or with industry or NGO, they do great. They're really respected for their science. And then they find themselves promoted where they have to start doing management.
The new program was approved by University Regents just in May and is an example of two campuses working together. CFAS in Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Southeast School of Arts and Sciences now offer a Master of Marine Policy degree. Criddle says the demand for such study was evident when they applied to formally offer the program by the letters of support that came in.
We got letters from the Commissioner of Fish and Game who said, this is exactly what we've needed. We've wanted it for a long time. We got a letter from the chair of the Board of Fisheries, the executive director of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the executive director of ASME, the U.S. Coast Guard, the Juneau Economic Development Council, the major seafood processing, shore-based and offshore organizations, and National Marine Fisheries Service.
Alaska has a diverse ocean management network. Some fisheries are managed by the state, some by the federal government. Marine mammals are protected, except for traditional use. Fish don't observe borders, and what happens in Canada and Russia affects Alaska.
Alaska lands roughly 60% of the total U.S. catch of fish and shellfish. That puts us on par with places like Norway and Japan in terms of total fisheries production. We'd be number 7 in the world.
Criddle is the Ted Stevens Distinguished Professor of Marine Policy. He says the program designers are working on ways to recruit more Indigenous students, especially from communities impacted by fishery and marine mammal policies.
One of these is a stakeholder advisory board, and we'll look for broad representation to come into that to help us with those questions.
He's ready for people to sign up right now and start the program in a few weeks. The program is open to students, but also to working professionals who are looking to upgrade their policy credentials.
And so we're pretty late in the curve for going for fall, but I've had over a dozen inquiries so far. You know, these have been coming in from graduating seniors. A lot have been coming in from Department of Fish and Game.
Criddle says marine policy graduates will be ready for jobs in federal agencies, tribal organizations, state agencies, non-governmental organizations, and private industry in Alaska, the nation, and across the world. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The Shunack tribe of Kodiak has been looking for ways to reduce the number of invasive signal crayfish from the island's Buskin Lake in order to protect crucial salmon habitat. As KMXT's Dylan Samard reports, tribal biologists are trying a shocking new method to try and thin their ranks.
Matt Vendale is the Shunack tribe's natural resources director. On a recent Wednesday morning, he went to Buskin Lake to test out a new method of catching the invaders. An electrofishing pack.
We're going to try to make these mudbugs ray the lightning.
The pack looks like it comes from Ghostbusters. A large battery connects to a control box mounted onto a hiking backpack frame. It connects to a long rod with a hoop at the end. A long rat tail extends behind the pack, with an exposed stretch of wire at the end that drags behind Vendale and his team, completing a circuit from the hoop at the end of the rod, through the water, and back up the tail. There's a lot of current running through that wire, enough to temporarily paralyze small freshwater animals. When it comes to hunting juvenile crayfish, the current propels them out of hiding and into Vendale's waiting net.
You pull your thing out, I'll try to get him. Oh, he's gone. Where are you going?
Will Frost is the instructor for this electrofishing expedition. The former habitat biologist with Alaska's Department of Fish and Game was hired as a consultant by the Shunack tribe. He says that the electric shocks don't harm other wildlife.
It doesn't really hurt them. It just flexes their muscles sporadically, and it gets them to come to the surface, and we can net them up, ID them, and so if we get juvenile salmon, we can just return those, put them in a bucket, let them recover real quick, and then return them to the water.
After a few hours, Vendale has a small menagerie of crayfish in his net. Juveniles and adult crayfish close to the shore are all affected by the electricity. The electrofishing pack might seem like an extreme solution, but Vendale says Buskin Lake's crayfish are an extreme problem. They present an existential threat to the salmon population, and the Shunack tribe has been trying to eradicate them before they spread to other salmon habitats. The electrofishing pack is another way to fight the problem.
The whole point of this was to try to catch the smaller ones and the juveniles that otherwise we wouldn't necessarily be able to catch when we're diving. We're doing exactly that. I mean, granted, I would like to be catching the adults more easily too, but you know, that's why we have a bunch of different tools in our toolbox to deal with these mud bugs.
The Shunack tribe of Kodiak has scheduled two community crayfish boils this summer in an effort to get locals involved in eradicating the pest from the Buskin Lake. Participants can help collect the mud bugs and will get to boil their crayfish and eat them on site. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Samard.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Riley Board in Kenai, Wesley Early in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Robin in Fairbanks, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Sabine Pooks in Soldotna, and Dylan Samard in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.